So thank you, Laurent, for the introduction. So I will get a follow-up on the previous talk about the model of elastic interface for microcracked materials. But since I don't want to get into too much trouble, I will do it very slowly. So this has been done with in collaboration with Estelle Berthier and Laurent Ponson at the Institut d'Alembert in Paris. So to start with, I will start with the basic phenomenology of damage that you all know. So as you, if you take a sample and you sample of rock or concrete and you compress it, you have first an elastic response. So the material remains intact; it just deforms elastically. Then it enters a plastic regime where the damage increases. So damage is basically microcracks form in the material, and at some point cracks aggregate along one band, and the whole sample fails. So this is the last step. This is the failure. So the basic phenomenology of this failure mechanism can be captured by two main points. So first, if you look at the acoustic emissions, you can see some intermittent behavior and some avalanches, and you can try, for example, to characterize the waiting time between acoustic events. So this will follow universal power laws, and so this makes you think that this is reminiscent, for example, from elastic interfaces close to the deepening transition. But something that you don't have for elastic interfaces is this localization mechanism. So the fact that these acoustic events, and so that are related to the damage events, that is the nucleation of microcracks, organized along bands here. And these bands may have a non-trivial angle that one may try to predict. So I will build a model of elastic interface for this this kind of system. So I will start with a very basic introduction to gather all the ingredients that we will need to build a damage model. Then I will present one detail model, and I will show some basic features that it can have. And then I will see how these features apply to the more realistic model. So to start with the 1D model, so first I will give one definition of damage, so how you have to think about damage. So we will see damage as a continuous field in the material, but if you look closely at some point in the material, there are microcracks. And how do you define the damage variable with these microcracks? Basically, you can, so imagine that these microcracks are penny-shaped, so you can enclose all of them in spheres. And I take the volume of this elementary volume to be this round V, and I take all I sum the volumes of all the small spheres enclosing the microcracks. And if I divide these two, take the ratio of these two volumes, this gives me a dimensionless variable that is the damage variable. So with this definition, the damage can go from zero to infinity because these spheres here can overlap. So, but there are other definitions of damage, but it was just to give a very practical, basic definition of what we mean by damage. So next thing is that the damage affects the elastic properties of the material. So this is an example of a sample of Etna basalt that is submitted to cyclic loading. And as you go through the loading cycles, the Young modulus decreases and the Poisson ratio increases. So we can to model this, we will use a very simple model here. That is the model that Jérôme presented and used. Is that the Young modulus decreases as is proportional to 1 minus the damage at each point, and the Poisson ratio is constant, so it's not affected by damage. So this is not, this doesn't correspond to what we see here, but we hope to describe or to take the main to capture the main physics of the main phenomenology of damage by this model. And there are more realistic expressions where people have tried to compute to compute these quantities. I won't enter into the details. They rest on some assumptions, for example, isotropy of the small cracks. And they are not valid also for all values of damage. So there is no perfect, we don't know perfectly what these values are theoretically. Next ingredient is how damage evolves. So what criterion to use for damage increase? So what we will take is that the damage increase is given by the difference between a driving force that depends on the stress and the damage level minus a local resistance. And since the damage can only increase and the material cannot heal, we take the maximum of this and zero. So if this is negative, the damage doesn't change. And so we can have several kind of criterion. So this is the criterion that Jérôme used for compression, so where the driving force is given by a shear stress and the resistance, and it is opposed by friction. But we can also, so what we used is an energetic, so this is analog to the Griffith criterion for damage evolution. So the driving force comes from the elastic energy release. So as when you increase the damage at one point, the material softens, the at constant strain, its elastic energy decreases. So this gives, the material would like to damage due to this this term. And the opposed term is the fracture energy that you have to pay to create, to break the material to create the small micro cracks or to increase their size. So this is the one that we will use here. And third ingredient is the distribution of stress in the material. So first assume that I take here a sample and I load it with uniaxial tension. And if I put a soft inclusion in the middle, this is the modification of the external stress field that will be induced by this soft inclusion. So the red means is overloading and is loading, and the blue is unloading. So basically, if I load it in this direction and there is a soft point here, these two zones will be unloaded, and these zones on the side will be loaded. So meaning that the stress will increase in this region. So first comment on this. This is very different to what happens for a crack front in an heterogeneous medium, because for a crack front, when one point advances, it increases the force on all the other points of the interface. And this is not the case, because when one point's damaged, it reduces the stress on some other points. So there is unloading here that is not present for a simple crack front. And we will see that this will play a crucial role. So this is a simple inclusion, but in the general case where the Young modulus depends continuously on the position, this problem requires numerical resolution with, for example, finite element methods. But in some cases it can be simplified. So for example, if the heterogeneities are very weak, then you can use the superposition principle and take the redistribution of the stress due to only one inclusion and to sum over all the inclusions. So you consider your heterogeneous field of Young modulus as a sum of inclusion, and so you just use the HLB redistribution as a Green function. So you take the convolution between the redistribution due to one inclusion with the variation of the Young's modulus. So this gives you the heterogeneous stress field as the sum of the external stress field plus this variation. So Jérôme has already showed similar expression in the previous talk. So now that we have these three main ingredients, so damage evolution tells us what is the damage. Then the damage modifies the elastic properties. So the elastic properties, if the damage is heterogeneous, the elastic properties will become heterogeneous. And this will redistribute the stress. And then the stress will go back into the damage evolution. So these are the basic ingredients of a damage damage model. So I will now implement them in a 1D toy model. So this model will just be, so it's a 1D model of parallel fibers, and these fibers are these elastic fibers are submitted to the same displacement. So the energy will just be the elastic energy for the fiber of the fiber. So the displacement squared times this is the stiffness of the fibers that depend on the level of damage. So here I take a continuous parameterization for the fibers. And then there is the fracture energy that is the energy that you had to pay to go to this to a given state of damage. So this is the what you should pay to damage fibers. And the energy criterion is as the damage increases, if this total driving force that is given by the derivative of this total energy with respect to the damage increases. And for the stiffness of the fibers, we took this complicated function, but just, I mean, it turned out that this gives an interesting phenomenology. And now this problem in itself won't be interesting at all because there is no coupling between the fibers. So the last thing that we have to do is to introduce coupling between the fibers. And to do so, we say that the elastic energy doesn't depend on the fibers only at one point, but at also doesn't depend on the damage at one point, but also on the neighboring points. And for that, we take a redistribution kernel that is given by this expression, so that may have this shape. So the redistribution kernel has one exponential decaying part, so this is a short-range correlation, and also has an oscillating part. So this kernel notably will have these negative parts, and why do we take that? We take that to kind of simulate the unloading that we saw in 2D systems. So this will simulate this very specific feature. So now when I say we, it's mainly Estelle who performed numerical simulation on this system. And what I will so there are lots of quantities you can look at, but the one we were interested in is the critical displacement. So the displacement at the impulse displacement at which you will reach the global failure of the system as a function of this small parameter, this oscillating parameter here. Okay, so this is the parameter that we can tune the correlation between the fibers, and I will look at the critical displacement as a function of this parameter. And we use quasi-static evolution. So that means we load the sample by small the impulse displacement is increased very very slowly. And if we do that and we plot the critical displacement as a function of this parameter, we find this curve. So here the different colors are for different values of the disorder. And we find here a small effect of the disorder. And so I don't want to focus on the effect of disorder here, so I will forget this this parameter, and I will just assume that today, I mean, the variation, I will assume this the variation to be small, and I won't focus on them. So there is this very peculiar shape that we have to explain. So first, the first thing we can look at is that we can look at if we look at the global force displacement curve, so assuming an homogeneous damage. So if we assume an homogeneous damage in the quasi-static evolution, we can parameterize the displacement and the force as a function of the level of damage. And this gives us a parametric curve that is plotted here. And we see that at some point, we have vertical tangent here, meaning that there is no stable solution for the system if you input a displacement greater than this value. Okay, so this gives us an instability so that we can compare to the simulations. And here is this homogeneous instability. So it's fine for the small values of the oscillating parameter, but not for the large values. And the strength, the very particular thing is that this curve here doesn't depend on this small parameter, okay? Because this is redistribution, so it will be involved only if there is non-local, only if there is heterogeneous damage. But if the damage is homogeneous, there is no effect at all of this. So we cannot capture this dependence. So the next thing that we can do is to try to go towards an elastic interface model. And elastic interface model, there is an elastic kernel that correlates the value of the height of the interface. So here, the height of the interface corresponds to damage. And this elastic kernel corresponds to the height of the interface at different points. So how do we do that? So to do that, we just take the total driving force, that is y, that depends on the impulse displacement delta, but also on the wall function of the damage. So so this function depends on the position, and now we expand it for a very weakly heterogeneous damage. So we write the damage as its mean value plus small variation, and we expand this as a function of this small variation to first order. And since we do it to first order, this is the only thing that we can find. We find a constant value plus something that is linear in the small displacement. And since we consider a system that is invariant by translation, we can write this linear function as a convolution kernel convoluted with this damage heterogeneity. And what should be noted here is that this convolution kernel depends, since we expand around some specific value of the average damage, it will depend on the average damage. So this is a very important feature, as we will see soon. So now we have this kernel, and we did a very simple thing, is that just look at the stability of this kernel. So since this kernel is the system is translation invariant, we can just write this kernel in Fourier space, and the eigenvalues of the kernel will just be the value of the kernel in Fourier space. So it's very simple. We just write this kernel in Fourier space, and we know that if for some mode the kernel is positive, this means that there is an instability of the interface for this specific mode. And now, if we plot this kernel as a function of the mode for different values of damage, we see that for some specific value of kappa, we see that it increases, and at some point there is one specific mode at which the kernel becomes unstable. And so this is an heterogeneous instability of the damage. That is of very different nature from the homogeneous instability. And now if we compare this value to the simulation, we see that we reproduce the instability of the seen in the simulations. So this is the nature of the instability that we see on the simulations. It's an instability that comes from the instability of the kernel, elastic kernel itself. So as a conclusion for this 1D part, we took an initial model with no linear elastic kernel. So this is something important. In the initial definition of the model, there was no elastic kernel. There was some definition of the redistribution of the stress, but this was not directly written in a linear way. And then if we expand the initial model around the weakly heterogeneous damage, we can find this expression for the driving force that is linear, and this is the expression that we have in all elastic interface model. So the driving force, there is a driving force that is uniform on all the interface plus some kernel time convoluted with the height of the interface. And actually what we do for the interface is the same thing. In the interface there is an elastic kernel that is not linear initially, but we expand it for small deformation of the interface. So this is the same thing. We expand this function for small deformations of the damage field, small heterogeneities, and we get this first linear term. And then we can perform a linear stability analysis of this in Fourier space by just looking at the sign of this kernel in Fourier space. And so if for usual interfaces such as the crack front in butyl failure, the kernel is always stable. And we saw that in this case in our example, in the damage model, it's not the case. And so now we are left in this specific model with two possible cases. So if So the model can either be instable in an homogeneous way, so that happens with, so this is the case for usual elastic interfaces, or it can be heterogeneous for a specific mode, and we say that in this case we will have localization with this with a given wavelength. So in this case, in the one-dimensional case, that is not very physical, there will just be the damage will just increase in regular patches given by this wavelength. And so this is this failure is very different from the usual deepening transition in the way that the kernel evolves with damage. So that is not the case usually. And the failure comes from a kernel instability, so there is weak effect of the disorder here. So by weak, I mean it seems weak, and we haven't understood it for now. So that's what I call weak. So now let's go to a more realistic two-dimensional model, because this 1D model was very, everything was introduced ad hoc. So how it comes in a more realistic model. So we take, for 2D model, if we consider the same damage criterion as just the derivative of the energetic damage criterion, and then we take usual continuum mechanics in the model. So we look in a plane strain. We are in plane strain condition, so we have an effective two-dimensional model, and the stress redistribution is just given by the equation of the continuum mechanics equations. And we consider two kind of loading here. We consider shearing and uniaxial traction. So the thing that we do for this model is we just follow the same procedure that we had for the 1D model. We consider a small weakly heterogeneous damage field, and we expand the driving force to the first order in the damage field heterogeneity, and so we get this the same kernel here. The question being now, what is this kernel? So this kernel has this takes this form that may seem quite complicated, but actually depends on very few parameters. So the parameter it depends on A and B, that are the elastic parameters that enter the Hooke's law. So this is the two-dimensional effective Hooke's law, but for you can write this parameter as a function of the Young modulus and the Poisson ratio. And the derivatives here represent the derivative with respect to damage. So how do this elastic parameter depend on damage? Sigma is the imposed stress, the outer stress. And the only dependence on space here is given by the dependence on the wave mode Q, and it is it enters into this matrix here that turns out to be to write as the Hossian tensor. So we didn't expect that, but maybe they may have some good reason for this. And so this matrix has this simple form here. And as it is quadratic in Q here in the mode, it is divided by Q square. So so actually you can write it as a function of the polar angle of the wave vector only. So now it doesn't depend on the amplitude of the wave vector; it depends only on this polar angle. And as we will see, this will have some strong effect. And so, just to give some flavor, what does this kernel look like? In real space, this kernel just writes in polar coordinates as some function of the angular of the angle divided by r square, and we can plot it for. So this is for shearing. So we have the usual quadrupolar term, and we can plot it for uniaxial traction, where we get this non-trivial shape. So, but. As this expression here is general, we can do it for any imposed any type of external any type of loading, so shearing, traction, and so on, or traction with confinement and different kind of shapes. So as I said, the kernel depends only on the angle of the wave vector. And so how will this become unstable? So as I said before, if it is unstable for a given wave vector, we expect to have localization or a burst of damage with according to this wave vector. But here, since it depends only on the angle, it means that all the wavelength with this angle will diverge if there is an instability at this for this angle. So how do we understand this? We just understand this by the simple fact that in 1D, if you sum all the cosine functions for if you integrate over all the wavelength with the same weight, what you get is a Dirac function. So if you take it in 2D, if you sum all the modes with so you take a given angle and you sum that all over all the wave vectors that have this angle but different, you sum over the you integrate over the magnitude of the wave vector, what you will get is a Dirac function is a Dirac function along the line. And so this corresponds exactly to what you would expect for cracks. So yeah, so this is in some sense what we could expect. And finally, so now we can get from this model for a given model, we can get the critical damage for localization, that is just the damage at which this kernel has one unstable angle. And this angle gives the angle of the localization that we can expect. So it gives the orientation of the bands. And so we can get for this simple model, for we can get the values of the angle. So this depends on the model. But what I want to emphasize is that this approach is valid for any damage model. So you can put all the ingredients that you want in the model. You can expand the driving force as a function of the heterogeneity of damage, and just follow the same procedure and get the same stability analysis. So this just rests on the computation of the elastic kernel, and so this is the so we get by doing this expansion the usual elastic model for the usual form that we have for an elastic interface model, and now it's for damage evolution, and the localization just comes from an elastic kernel instability. So just to finish about what do we have to do next, is that this is not like the usual deepening transition. So how do we understand the avalanche statistics that we have that we are used to? And for example, one question could be how can we quantify the anisotropy of this? Is there some anisotropy in these avalanches in this type of model? Thank you for your attention.
Just a question, maybe I misunderstood, but it seemed like the elastic instability, the singularity in the kernel, it seemed very much like just a Hadamard instability, that if you were to take the tangent moduli there, that basically you would find a direction at which you no longer positive definite moduli. Is that the same thing?
You mean?
I mean, it looked like a Hadamard instability.
You mean this one, or
the last thing you were talking about, where the kernel, you get wavelengths that
yes.
localize. Yeah, it seemed like that was just the Hadamard instability. You looked at the tangent moduli, and you looked at the determinant along those directions of that acoustic tensor, that then you'd find a zero eigenvalue.
I'm not aware of this.
It goes back to Hadamard in the 1920s, 1930s.
Oh, I wasn't born.
Yeah, I mean, it may be. but it has been translated into French.
Oh.
No, but it just seems very interesting because that gives you the angle.
It may be the same
tensor that. That leads to that instability.
Yes.
You said that 1D and 2D models are similar, but I don't see that they're similar. In 1D, you have a particular wavelength.
Yes.
And you have a strongly kind of anti-ferromagnetic kernel, and your instability is like of Turing type. While in your 2D model, as Alan mentioned, you have this instability with where all wavelengths simultaneously become unstable, so it's like loss of strong ellipticity of your equations. So they're very different instabilities.
Yes, yes, it depends where you put the very threshold. But I mean, the procedure is the same, and we just get an instability that comes from the AC kernel itself. That's just what I wanted to say. But
In first case, you have a selected
yes.
wavelength. In the
yes.
second, no.
Yes.
Okay. So I had a question about the equation that you had for the damage evolution. You know, D dot is the difference between the driving force and the resistance. And in particular, I just wanted you to sort of explain the dimensional analysis of that equation. In other words, you could explain more where it comes from. In other words, I think what's on the right-hand side are something like a stresses, and the damage is a dimensionless quantity. So I was wondering if you could remark on where that.
I just forgot some parameter mu here. That is some kind of viscosity, or that should just there should be a parameter that. Makes everything correct dimensionally.
Then let me ask a different question. Should I think of this as energy balance? Or stress balance? Or in other words, sort of what physical principle is behind this equation?
So
it's just a constitutive law.
Yes. This is for the energetic criterion. It can be the Griffith criterion that is used for cracks. So we can just take put a viscosity that is the viscosity that enter the law for the propagation of linear cracks. For this model, it's something else. But what we want to say there is a lot of arbitrary things in this equation. And for example, so we just want to say that damage increases when this is positive, but...
Let me make a comment on that. Energy conservation would be D dot equals zero. Y, driving force equal YC, G equal GC. Will be a Griffith criterion.
Right.
And then you assume a kind of overdone dynamic you plot by hand, assuming that damage will grow linearly with the driving force and oppositely to the resistance. As we write, crack growth velocity proportional to G minus GC, but it's put by hand.
Okay, that helps.
And also neglecting inertial effect. We don't have D dot dot.
Okay, that helps give me an idea of where this comes from. Thank you.
Would the model be applied to crystalline material as well as amorphous materials, the model you have here?
So this is for. I don't know if the same feature would apply because this is for damaged material. So this rests a lot on the dependence of the elastic heterogeneities on the microcrack density, on the damage. But I don't know much about crystalline materials, so I cannot. I don't see what we would. What would be the interface or what would be the. What the damage would represent in these cases?
So basically, for disorder material, the model you have here.
Yes, if it's even more than disorder, it's brittle, it's quasi brittle material, so it's brittle at a small scale. You have micro cracks, and the Young's modulus depend on this crack density. It's more for rocks, concrete, these kind of materials.
Thank you.
I think this is working. Yeah. Can you go to your last figure that had the size, the avalanche size distribution?
So
you said this is different than other models, and I had gotten a little bit lost as to what the different
is?
Colors, but by the time I got here. So I'm not sure that I follow exactly what particular feature of this you think is so different and why that is interesting.
So actually here that there is no specific different feature. So here the color is the distance to the threshold. So you see that the cutoff increases as you approach the threshold, but this is not different from what we have usually.
Okay, so that's why I thought that seemed normal to me. Then you said it was different.
We don't know for now, and we have to perform more analysis on this. So this is still I really don't see how it could be the same because it's a very different kind of transition. So.
Okay. What do you think is the key difference? I'm not understanding that. Okay. I think.
Maybe Vincent, can I make a comment? The growth of this length scale is because the kernel evolves as you go towards the localization. That is very different from classical deepening model where you have a constant kernel, but the closer you get to the critical point, you have a length scale emerging.
Okay.
So in that case, the exponent is very trivial, is one.
That helps. Thanks.
At the very end of your talk, you said that you have a localization under tension at an angle of 57 degrees or something like that.
Yes, so just to be...
Where does it come from? I mean, it seems very strange.
Just to be precise, this is the angle between this is the vertical axis, is the axis of tension. This is the crack axis with respect to the axis of tension.
So why it is not 90?
So it's simple to get it. So assume that. To look at the angle, you just want to, if you want to pick the most unstable mode, you just take this, you want to minimize what is in the square here. And if depending on sigma, depending on the sign of a prime and b prime, you can cancel it or not, right? But in the case of uniaxial tension and for the a and b that comes from the simple model I gave from the dependence of elastic modulus, we see that we can cancel what is in here. And the angle will depend on this A prime and B prime only. So what we see is that it cancels for the expression is something like QY over Q is square minus B prime over A prime. So there is a simple expression from the elastic modulus here. Yeah, this is highly model dependent. Yes.
Okay, any other question or comments? Okay, so probably we should stop this session. Thank you, Vincent, for the talk. And so we meet together tomorrow at 9 a.m. for the granular section.